This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:06 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, and we're starting off our show with a discussion about heritage, because yesterday UNESCO recognised Upacara Wangkang, or the Wangkang ceremony, and Pantun as intangible cultural heritage, and this joined the likes of Mak Yong, Dondang Sayang and Silat. It is worth saying that we got these recognitions actually through a multinational nomination, because the Wangkang procession was jointly nominated with China and Pantun was co-nominated with Indonesia. And so I think Pantun is something many of us would be very familiar with. We would at least know it from school, if nowhere else, as a form of poetry with a structure that sees two lines conveying imagery and hints and allusions, and then two lines conveying a message, whether it's an advice, a wish, guidance, and so on. Meanwhile, Upacara Wangkang is a tradition that originated in Malacca since the 1800s. I think this one, I'm just speaking for myself, I'm much, much less familiar with. And it is a barge festival that invites wandering souls, spirits, other negative elements along before they're then sent into the unknown or afterlife. And I think the idea here is that following on from that, there would be peace, prosperity and happiness in that place which saw the procession. So Tourism, Arts and Culture Minister Datuk Sri Nancy Shukri celebrated UNESCO's move, saying that it shows our commitment to protecting our traditions, adding that it's everyone's responsibility to preserve them for future generations. So we wanted to highlight this, seeing as it is good news, but also to take the opportunity to look more closely at one art form, one ceremony, and also look at its ties to other countries and other places, and then extend that conversation further on to talk about that last point from the minister, that it's everyone's responsibility to preserve them for future generations. I think, you know, when you look at that statement on the face of it, there is nobody who would disagree with that. You know, it is, of course, important to have these ties to our history. The question becomes, though, because these are lived experiences, these are things that people practice, right? For the longest time, the Pantun was an oral tradition. And I think that we need to ask ourselves, aside from just preserving it, or aside from celebrating when these things are recognized and feeling very happy about that, how many of us are actually engaging with it in everyday life? And how many of us even know where we could go in order to engage with it? Because when you're talking about living forms of culture, I think it's important to have that constant engagement, if not every day, just that level of awareness, because otherwise, I don't know how they stay alive. So that's what we wanted to talk about today. And we're going to be speaking after this with Pauline Fan, who is the creative director at Pusaka. And she'll be taking us through all this. In the meantime, if you have any thoughts you'd like to share, any questions, we're talking about UNESCO recognizing Wangkang and Pantun as intangible cultural heritage. And this joins Mak Yong, Dondang Sayang and Silat. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-88. 899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's coming along to 5:13. This is the Evening Edition with Lynn, and we're talking today about UNESCO recognising Upacara Wangkang and Pantun as intangible forms of cultural heritage. And this joins Mak Yong, Dondang Sayang and Silat, although this was part of a multinational approach. So Wangkang was along with China, while Pantun was together with Indonesia. So that's where we find ourselves. And today we want to just kind of mark the moment that this happened and talk about the significance of it. If you have any questions or thoughts you'd like to share, I mean, how often do you engage with forms of cultural heritage and how do you do it, right? Is it just during festive celebrations? Does it go beyond that? Let us know. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now on the line with us is Pauline Fan, Creative Director at Pusaka. Pauline, always a pleasure to speak with you.
Hello, Jen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Okay, I thought we could start with a bit of a 101 question. Maybe you could talk to us about both Wangkang and Pantun. You know, what forms do they take? What do you know about their history?
Yes, it's actually, first of all, it's really welcome news, I think, that we should celebrate that UNESCO has recognized both the Wangkang and the Pantun traditions. And as you said, although they are multinational traditions, I think that is the nature of many of our cultural heritage traditions are multinational by nature. And I think it's encouraging to see this kind of approach as well, so that we don't also get stuck in this sort of nationalistic fight over cultural heritage. And so taking this kind of multinational approach to recognize that many of our traditions spill over both in the diasporic communities, such as the Wangkang, and also the Nufantara communities, such as the Pantun is part of this kind of Nufantara heritage. So yes, it's a very welcome piece of news that we both celebrate. And the Wangkang, just very briefly, the Wangkang is a tradition that has been practiced by the Hokkien community, I believe. I'm not an expert in this, so I've never actually seen a Wangkang festival or ceremony. It's something that I would definitely like to witness. I believe it was practiced first in China among the Hokkien communities in Fujian. And like many of our traditions in the Chinese community, that was brought over by migrants who settled in the peninsula. And I believe it was brought over probably sometime in the 1800s. I think the first recorded festival in Malacca was in 1854. Mm. And the ceremony consists of a procession of a ship. There's a built ship, and it is said to symbolize when they do this procession throughout the streets of Malacca, it symbolizes gathering, kind of wandering souls and evil spirits, and then to send them off through the end of the ceremony, which is the burning of the ship, and that is to kind of send them off either to the netherworld or so that they leave our world in peace for a while. And this is a ceremony that only takes place. It's not a yearly ceremony. It's not even every other year. It actually takes place only when the deity give the message through spirit mediums that this ceremony should take place. And so it's something that the community, it's very much still alive, and also very much, it's very much dependent on the times that we live through. And so actually this year, in the pandemic year, I believe they just had one actually in November. And a very kind of quiet ceremony that they had, not this because of course all the restrictions. It was done actually also in response to this COVID pandemic. And so in the past, many of the Wangkang ceremonies that have taken place were actually in response to things like epidemics and pandemics. And so this particular year is something that where the Wangkang is, you can see its social significance and how it still operates in the life of the community.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think, so I, of course, have also not seen a Wangkang, but just hearing that description, it sounds as if it would be a very beautiful and cathartic experience.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm. And so, of course, the purpose, I suppose, is to send off whatever, evil spirits, of course, that too, we can't take literally. It's also, you know, all of these things are symbolic of something. And so, it's whatever is putting the community in danger, any perceived threats and any kind of negative energies that are disturbing the community. And really the purpose of the ceremony is to pray and hope for peace and prosperity.
And the Pantun, I think, is something that we're all much, much more familiar with, but it's also maybe something that we don't think about necessarily historically. It's we think about it more in terms of its form. Perhaps you could take us through its history, its evolution, its original purpose.
Yes, I think the first recorded, again, so the Pantun is, very briefly, it's a poetic form of the Malay language, and it does exist throughout the Nusantara region. It is, in essence, the quatrain, although there are other forms. I think there are also forms of Pantun that are, some of them can be two lines, and some of them can be, if you go into Pantun Berkayat, it can be multiple verses of quatrains. But I think the basic, most familiar form that we learn and that we're familiar with is a quatrain, which is four lines, in the kind of rhyme scheme of ABAB. And there's a particular rhythm to it. And also, I think what makes it special is the kind of imagery. And so it's divided into these two sections, the first two lines is usually called the Pembayang Maksud, which is like the foreshadow of meaning. That's not a perfect translation of what the Malay is, but it gives the kind of, the imagery speaks, or gives the kind of intimation of what the message of the pantun is. And the second two lines of the pantun usually encapsulate a kind of maksud, yeah? So it's a sort of meaning or purpose or message that the pantun wants to convey. I believe that the first instances of written pantun were recorded in the Sejarah Melayu, probably in the 15th century, although it is, in essence, a oral tradition. And so the pantun, before it was actually recorded in writing, I'm sure was existent for a long time in the oral tradition of the communities of Nusantara. And so it was something that was practiced. And the pantun, of course, nowadays, I think, like you said, we are sort of familiar with the form, but we tend to be more familiar with the form, I think, in its official capacity or from what we learn in school in sastra, class sastra, or that kind of thing. Yeah. But I think what is fascinating about the pantun is actually its lived experience as an oral tradition, because there is this tradition also of balas pantun, which is actually spontaneous composition of pantun and response, call and response. That, I think, is a tradition that's really fascinating and something that hopefully this kind of recognition will help us keep that alive.
So on that note about recognition, what is the underground impact of having this UNESCO acknowledgement of intangible cultural heritage?
I think it's definitely, I think there's a sense of pride that we should all certainly be proud that that these traditions are being recognized. However, the on-the-ground impact in terms of the communities that practice these forms, I think it could go either way. It's really up to us and how we implement programs in response to this recognition and if we know ourselves how to make meaning of it. And so I think we need to, it's important that we go beyond the rhetoric of just saying, you know, it's been recognized. I think we should come together to think about ways in which we can also safeguard and also allow these traditions to flourish. That takes, I think, a really holistic approach to intangible cultural heritage.
Okay, so then let's talk about the measures, you know? So if we were to make sense of this, what do you think that should look like?
Well, education, I think, is an essential part of any kind of program to safeguard and to sustain intangible cultural heritage. Education is certainly part of it, and that is both in the through official channels, meaning in schools, as well as public education, I think is very important. So just more education in terms of, and more writing and research and discussion also about what, not just these forms, but our intangible cultural heritage in general. I think when certain forms like the Wang Kang and like the Pantun and like the previous forms from Malaysia that have been recognized, like Silat Dondan Sayang and Mak Yong, I think when these intangible traditions are recognized, it also is an opportunity, if we know how to embrace it, to look at the rest of our incredibly rich intangible cultural heritage. And hopefully this allows us then to really educate ourselves and educate ourselves not just in what these forms are, but also in what it takes to allow these forms to flourish. And I think for us at Pusaka, it's always been important for these forms to flourish at the community level. Many of them are community traditions. Of course, the Wang Kang is a very specific community tradition. It's very specific to the Hokkien community in Malacca, although I do believe that there are some other Hokkien communities that also might practice the Wang Kang as well. I've heard that there are that there's a similar ceremony in Kuching. I don't know specifically about that, but I have heard that. And so it's important, I think, to actually learn more for ourselves about these traditions.
And just in closing, we have about a minute left with you, Pauline, but so aside from learning about it, how else do you think people can engage with these art forms and keep them alive? I know this is a very existential question, but I think it is an important one.
I think it's also important for us to not keep them as museum pieces, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially something like the pontoon is especially open to this kind of innovation as well. And it has been open to innovation for a long time. You know, the pontoon has evolved also. I mean, it went all the way to Europe. You know, Victor Hugo really appreciated the pontoon's form. And in fact, the French were inspired to create their own poetic form called the pontoon, which was based on the pontoon. And so the pontoon itself has had a natural evolution. It's still evolving today. And there are actually many young writers who are also using this form today. I hope that this also encourages them. But again, like I said, I think hopefully one of the things that comes back into popularity is also this traditional balas pantun, which is entirely spontaneous, which is really a lively tradition. It's also very difficult, of course, because you need to be very chick-up at your metaphors and imagery. it's not an easy thing to do. But hopefully, with this kind of recognition, there is more of encouragement to do that and to keep it alive in a meaningful way.
Pauline, thank you so much for stopping by and speaking with us.
Yes, thank you, Lynn. Always a pleasure.
That was Pauline Fan, Creative Director at Pusaka, speaking to us about recognition from UNESCO of Upacara Wangkang and Pantun as intangible cultural heritage. So we want to know, how do you engage with your cultural heritage? Is it through these ceremonies? Is it through art forms? You know, is it something that you only practice maybe during the festive season, during specific times of year? Let us know what that looks like for you. You can call us with your thoughts at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at PFM Radio. And I think that we do actually have a caller on the line. We have Kevin. Kevin, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Good evening.
Hi.
Lynn. Okay, Nice speaking to you. Okay, I would like to share my thoughts more on pantun, and then the next one would be the wangkang, because I hail from Malacca. So I've actually seen the wangkang myself for 3 times.
Oh, wonderful.
And this year, because of the COVID situations, the skill was not being reduced. However, the devotees who actually took part in the processions has actually been scaled down. And here, I would like to share with you, if you got chance, you can actually take a look at Facebook page, okay? Go through the temple's name by the name of the Court of Bravery. You will be able to see how lavish the wangkangs look like for this year's procession. And I think, generally, the Peranakan community play a very important role in making this whole event a success. And they are able to reward in terms of the feast that were being held in honour of the deity, to actually cast away all those bad spirits and to carry along all those, like, for example, the negativities which actually wanders around on Earth. So usually what it happens is that the deity, he himself, will actually go through a trance and signify the date where the Wangkang processions to be held. So surprisingly, the next Wangkang Festival will be held in 11 years later in 2031, 15th of November. Yeah.
Wow, so we already know that far ahead.
Yes. Mm. And another interesting note to see is that usually whenever the years where Wangkang Festival is held, right, there will be a major event or pandemic that actually took place. It could be a natural disaster or an economic recession, so on and so forth. So I think this is something that is very unusual, that the future event has been foretold for many years ahead. Yeah, like this year when the Wangkang was planned, I think in 2017, nobody could expect that the world would be hit by COVID-19. Yeah.
And I think earlier you said that you also wanted to share some thoughts on pantun.
Yes. Okay, because I was educated in national school, Sekolah Kebangsaan. I was being taught pantun when I was in Standard 2. I still could remember how my teachers actually guided us to develop our own pantun. Of course, we started off with the very basic one, the Saya Budak Baru Belajar, so on and so forth. But the interest was actually being developed at a very tender age of 10 years old. Because the teachers actually exposed us to a lot of pantons, not only panton, but we also learned about Saja, Sha'ir, and Gurindam. I'm not sure what's the exposure being given to students nowadays when they learned about all these cultural folklores through pantons, through gurindam in Bahasa Malaysia. So I think the interest needs to be nurtured so that they will learn to appreciate the panton more and, put in a lot of efforts to make their own panton.
Kevin, thank you so much for calling and for sharing all those thoughts and your experience.
Yeah, okay, thank you. You have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Yes, you too. Bye. That's so brilliant because earlier on when we heard from our guest Pauline, she had mentioned that she hasn't actually seen a wangkang. And so to have somebody call in who's seen not one but many and who can tell us the date of the next one is kind of stupendous. So I think what we heard Kevin say earlier was Facebook, you can look up the Court of Bravery if you wanted to look at photos of what the procession looked like this year. So would recommend that you do that. And also send us your thoughts. UNESCO has recognized wangkang and pantun as intangible cultural heritage. Are you proud of that? What does that mean for you? And is this something that you, doesn't have to be this, but, you know, do you engage with these sorts of cultural ceremonies and art forms in your own life? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.